Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Blockchain Super Conference is coming to Dallas, Texas, February 16, 17, and 18 in 2018. If you know of a better way to get the latest insider knowledge about crypto, to hear directly from the top minds in this field, to interact personally with 800 fellow crypto lovers, hodlers, investors, miners, traders, developers, and founders, then I'd like to hear about it. If you don't, then you don't want to miss out. Register today for the Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Blockchain Super Conference. Go to BitcoinSuperConference.com and register today as a super early bird to get the lowest rates on tickets and hotel rooms. That's BitcoinSuperConference.com.
Welcome to Almost Here, Around the Corner of Future Technology Podcasts with Richard Jacobs. Future technologies poised to transform our lives for better or worse are the focus of this podcast. Almost Here means these technologies are now here and starting to be used, or just around the corner, from Bitcoin to artificial intelligence, 3D printing, blockchain, virtual reality, and more.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with Future Tech Podcast. My guests today are Kyle Samani and Tushar Jain, co-founders of Multicoin Capital. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it. So, I met you guys in person very briefly at the local Austin-based Factum meetup, on Bitcoin. And I wanted to talk to you about Multicoin. So, let me know, what does Multicoin do?
Multicoin Capital is a thesis-driven crypto fund. What that means is we operate somewhat like a venture capital fund. We do a lot of deep research into technology, into protocols, into crypto economics, and we make investment decisions buying up tokens, right? Liquid tokens. And we typically hold them for an extended period of time. We aim to make large returns on our investments. We look like a venture capital firm in a lot of ways. The key kind of exception being, if we change our minds over time, we will exit a position. If we see things happening in the market, we might do a little bit more active management to hedge out some risk. So we kind of get the best of both worlds. As we believe that crypto is going to change the world, as I think probably most of your readers believe that too. So we make those kinds of, life world-changing investments or investing in those kinds of protocols. But then we also get the benefit of having a liquid asset that trades every day. In fact, trades 24/7. And so we can manage risk and much more intelligently than a traditional venture capital firm.
Private as a venture capital firm with public market liquidity. So, if we get new information, like Kyle was mentioning, about an asset where we don't think the returns are going to be what we thought they were before, we have the ability to sell out of the position or to double down if we get new information where we increase our conviction in that specific asset. So it really is the best of both worlds, from the venture capital returns profile plus the risk mitigation and the optionality provided by public markets.
Yeah, that's great. I wonder, and I'll get into this, there's 1,000 tokens out there. How do you even begin to focus your research? How do you know what to look at? What are some of the metrics?
So we typically start off, we have kind of some general qualitative and quantitative criteria, but really what drives everything is first on a qualitative basis. We're not interested in investing in things that we think are going to pop 2x or that we think we can get a 15% return. That's not the game we play. If you're going to invest in protocols that are going to change, some sector of commerce, then kind of the key question we ask ourselves whenever we evaluate a new protocol is, who's the middleman today who's extracting rents? And then how does your protocol get rid of that middleman, get rid of the rent extraction, and connect those two parties or three parties or 10 parties together so they can transact globally, anonymously, and trustlessly in a way that wasn't possible before? And so as we look at things, that's always the thing we're looking for, is cutting out the middleman. We spend a lot of our time, obviously we look at everything that's trading liquid. The first two pages on market cap we're pretty familiar with, kind of off the back of our heads, and then we get quite a bit of deal flow coming our way from both other fund managers as well as from teams, coming to us directly and pitching us. And then just kind of, we obviously read a ton of stuff on the internet, so we're always browsing around, poking around. It's pretty common I'll, just go down one random rabbit hole kind of every day, and that will lead me to some project that maybe is interesting.
Yeah, and maybe to add a little bit more detail around how we evaluate some of these tokens, we start on the qualitative side, standard questions, and then, of course, have to do some due diligence that's actually specific to that asset or that use case. And then we also have some really interesting quantitative criteria that we take a look at. Of course, there's kind of the very standard market cap and or volume. You want to make sure the position is active and you're able to out. But in addition to that, we look at things like community engagement. So look at how many Twitter followers they have. Look at how many Reddit subscribers they have. Look at the diversification of their actual development. So how many GitHub contributors do they have? How many are active? And just look at the community around that as well in order to determine, like, is this a project with real staying power and real engagement, or is it a flash in the pan?
Well, tell me what kind of behaviors that you think are conducive to a coin doing well. You know, for instance, do they have a roadmap and do they update often and, you know, hit their milestones in the roadmap versus just go quiet for a whole year and say nothing? I mean, what do you guys look for that tells you something's going well? Or
that's a great place to start, is to look at the roadmap and look at how they're delivering on the roadmap. We love projects that deliver monthly updates. If they actually talk about, this is what we did this month, this is why we did this, this is where our, you know, asset balance is after, you know, they've raised some money out of, you know, their initial token sale or some other mechanic. And so showing the world that they're being responsible with the development and they're continuing to push the ball down the field.
To add a little maybe more context there, Tushar and I are both technology entrepreneurs. We both started companies, we both raised venture capital, we both built and sold products and even sold companies. So we've got at least some sense for what that takes to recruit a team, you know, both engineering as well as non-engineering roles, and the kind of transparency and governance you need to really run an organization that does something of significance. And transparency is probably, if you have to pick a single kind of litmus test kind of a thing, transparency is probably it. The teams that go into a black hole, it's almost always a sign that something's not going right, because they're dealing with the problem that caused them to be in the black hole and they're not communicating with the public. So transparency is a huge, huge thing.
So what? Just give me some of the basic criteria to be able to be a part of the fund. Is it open? Is it closed? I would guess you have to be an accredited investor. You know, what are some of the details if someone's interested in getting into the fund?
Yeah, so we operate within the confines of the United States regulatory framework. It's a standard LPGP structure. What that means in practice is we can only accept accredited investors. We actually wanted to accept non-accredited, but there's just no practical legal way for us to do so within the framework we operate in. In terms of kind of minimums and stuff, our minimum is $100,000 U.S. dollars. We do take investments in crypto. In fact, I think most of our larger investors have invested primarily large amounts of Bitcoin or large amounts of Ether into the fund, and then we take that and then we'll move that into kind of the assets that are more broadly represented in the fund. We do take dollars, and we do accept international investors as well. We have a feeder fund in the Cayman Islands that feeds into our U.S.-based funds.
And then let's go back to the market research. I'm not asking you to give me your secret sauce. You know, don't worry about that. But again, when I contemplate researching stuff, I find myself, it's like I'm in a candy store, you know? Oh, look, there's a new token. Let me look at that. Ooh, look at this one. Ooh, you know, how do you avoid that temptation of just wandering off and you know, being romanced by 100 different tokens? And how do you even focus yourself so you know, all right, I'm not even going to worry about these. I'm just going to focus here for my research.
Don't worry about the secret sauce too much. We actually value transparency not only in the teams that we invest in, but we're actually pretty transparent ourselves. And we publish a lot of our research on our website. So at multicoin.capital/blog, you can actually see some of our latest research. And it gives a good view into the depth of the research that we do, as well as gives an idea about the types of questions that we're asking and how we look at the actual valuations of these different assets. As to your question about how do we stay focused, that's just part of being, you know, professionals in the space and having a schedule at which we're evaluating different assets, different asset classes within the space, and kind of holding up to timelines, structuring the research process.
And I'm always fascinated to know people that look at a lot of data. I always feel like they know things that other people don't know because they look at a lot of data. So tell me, what do you guys see that's surprising to you that you think the average run-of-the-mill person that just, you know, owns X number of coins and looks at our news articles and stuff doesn't know? What trends and patterns and unusual things are you seeing in the market right now?
Yeah, so I'll give you two kind of distinct examples. One, kind of just a news type of thing that I've been surprised by, and then one, kind of more generally valuation kind of framework thing. So, for example, Zcash is a pretty widely known token. Zuko, you know, is a project lead there, is a pretty well-respected guy, pretty active in, on Twitter and Reddit and stuff. Zcash, about a week ago, announced that they basically made ZK Snarks, which is their kind of encryption technology, they made it basically usable on a mobile phone, which prior to that, it was just too computationally intensive to run on any modern cell phone. They announced something like a 98% reduction in like CPU usage or CPU like required, as well as memory required, so it can now run on a phone. That's a huge deal because now you could actually send a Zcash transaction from your phone, which was not possible. That news happened, and the market didn't move at all. From all the kinds of things you think that might cause, you know, Zcash to move, I would think that would be one of them. Just as, so one kind of tidbit fact that's pretty interesting. Relatedly, so Funfair is another asset that we're pretty bullish on. And about 2 weeks ago or so, maybe 3 weeks ago, Jez and the team there announced that they had originally announced they were going to do two token sales, and that they had been clear about from the get-go. And they basically said, we're canceling the second token sale. And so that means that, like, the number of tokens that will ever be in existence is much lower now than what had been previously forecasted. And that means there's not going to be a whole bunch of new selling pressure on existing token holders as new dollars kind of take those new tokens. And that announcement came out, and the price didn't move, which right. You would think in a quote-unquote rational market, the price should go up in response to that kind of news. So there's a lot of fascinating things that caused, you would think that kind of news would cause the price to move, and it doesn't. Taking kind of a step out in a little higher level, this is a topic we've been discussing a lot internally for the last few months, and we're going to start writing about it and talking about it a lot more actively here in the next few weeks, is the concept of what we call velocity. And this is basically boils down to the concept of, do you have a reason to hold the token? And if you don't have a reason to hold the token, if you receive the token, whether you're a consumer and like someone pays you for whatever reason, like for example, Steam pays you for producing content, or Civic pays you for like authorizing information, there's a whole bunch of examples. In those cases, if you get paid in whatever that token is, what's your reason to hold the token? Because if you just turn around and sell it immediately, and everyone else also does the same thing, then there's always going to be constant downward price pressure on the token, and the token's never going to appreciate in price. You need people who actually want to hold the token because they believe they will have some future utility value for that token. And this is something we think is endemic to the significant majority of tokens that are out there today.
And to tie those three examples together, this broader example of velocity that's applicable to more, like a very significant percentage of the token out there, as well as the two specific examples about Funfair and Zcash, is one of my favorite investing quotes is an old Warren Buffett quote about how in the short term, the market is a voting machine, and in the long term, it's a weighing machine. And our job here is to most accurately estimate the weight. So in the short term, the people who are voting in the market don't realize these types of things, and they don't see that, well, actually, ZK Snarks being two orders of magnitude more efficient is a really big deal, or Funfair dilution being less is a really big deal, or velocity is really consider when investing. But even though they're not voting on that and the market price doesn't reflect that today, doesn't mean that that's not going to become extremely relevant to the price in the future.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you think that the crypto markets are less efficient and news is more fragmented and travels less slowly than the equities markets, for instance.
Absolutely. There's a level of maturity achieved by the equity markets where you have kind of standards that everything is held to and correlations are lower, and that they're definitely far more sophisticated when it comes to responding to news in an appropriate way than in the crypto markets when you look at, you know, just the three examples that Kyle gave.
Absolutely, right? So, like, to that end, this morning, for example, I was meeting with an investor. This gentleman is one of the most respected technology executives in Austin, built companies like to, you know, hundreds of millions of revenue from zero. He's like an engineer by trade, and he's extremely technical. And he had heard of Bitcoin. He conceptually understood how the blockchain worked. And, you know, so I was talking to him, for example, about Augur earlier today, and I was explaining how the token system works and how they're the backstop in the case, you know, a bad outcome being reported. And he was like, okay, so when you value Augur, like you're buying equity in the company. And I was like, no, there is no company. Like there is just tokens in a network and you just own a part of the network. And like that's just such a radical concept that's so different than anything that's existed before. or like the guy he picked up on what I was saying, but the fact that even someone with his stature, you know, it took 5 minutes for it to click, that just tells you that, you know, the markets more broadly certainly have not really digested how to think about these assets. And the problem is, in particular with crypto, is these assets, a lot of them are qualitatively different. Equity is fundamentally equity. Whether you're buying Amazon stock or Apple stock or Bank of America stock. Now, you know, the company's revenue statements and balance sheets certainly look different based on the industry you're in. But at the end of the day, the value of the stock is purely a function, or, you know, should be a function of, you know, the cash flows that are paid out to the equity holders. And there's like some rational way to calculate that. And that's true for every single company. And here, the way you value Augur versus Factum versus Ethereum versus whatever, like, those are actually qualitatively different valuation models. That's a big part of what we do is, you know, we dive into these things and understand, you know, we have to derive a new valuation model for this thing to really understand it. And that just takes time.
And Kyle, you just sparked another thought that I think is relevant here when comparing crypto markets to equity markets is regulation in equity markets means that you know that when you buy a share in Bank of America versus buying a share in Exxon, you are actually buying intrinsically the same thing that's governed by very similar rules, where there is a board of directors that represents you, there's certain, you know, regulations that make sure that everything is audited, et cetera. Whereas in the crypto markets, you don't have that same baseline level of credibility for every single project. So that's where doing deep due diligence really becomes even more important, is because you can't have the same basic assumptions that translate from project to project like you can when you're evaluating equities, and you do have the same basic assumptions that can translate from equity to equity.
Yeah, it's like Bitcoin. I've heard from people, you know, well, who runs Bitcoin? Where's the company? And it's weird. There is no company. And I also looked at these tokens, you know, like most of them don't pay quote-unquote dividends. So what do you own when you own tokens, right? You're invested in the success of that protocol network. And if that network does well and is successful, then you would think that the price of the tokens would go up in addition to their utility. So yeah, it's hard to get your head around this because it is a different kind of beast.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's just one of the reasons why these markets are far less efficient than traditional equities markets.
You know, it's an impossible question. No one knows the future. But do you think it's going to be happening in the next 6 months or a year? Do you see regulation coming to ICOs? Do you see, you know, a few ICOs blowing up and losing investor money and that tanking the market? Do you see the market just continuing to do well and shrug off problems? I mean, what major factors do you see coming?
Yeah, so I don't think most of the ICOs we've seen yet are going to start to flail out and burn out. I mean, most of them have raised enough cash, so that's not a problem. Even the ones that only raised, call it $2 million, you know, I'm assuming those teams aren't hiring 30 people, because that obviously wouldn't work. But, you know, if you raise $2 million and you hire a six-person team, like, that'll last you a couple years at least. So I don't yet think we're at the point where we're going to see most of the ICOs kind of run out of cash. I think that's going to be it. It'll start to happen in 2018, and I think it'll become a real problem in 2019.
You will start to see people miss roadmap deadlines, right? There will be some effect from that, don't you think, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if people say they're delayed. I don't know how the market's going to react. I mean, what we saw with Funfair and Zcash, like, these things are, in my opinion, objective, like, huge things that should drive valuation. The market didn't move. So maybe people are like, oh, we're 60 days behind. I think China, I don't think it can get any worse, is now. I believe they know that that is. And so, you know, in the U.S., I've spoken to 5 or 6 lawyers who are ex-SEC who are, like, now consult with companies like us about the SEC. This is obviously very important to us as investors. And our kind of sense is that we're going to continue to see the SEC, like, poking its head around. There's going to continue to be kind of, like, weekend phone calls and things happening. I'm not expecting to see the hammer drop. We might see another statement to try and scare the market a little bit to get some of the fraudulent activity out of the system. I do think exchanges will delist assets. U.S.-based exchanges will delist assets that are securities. Those assets will drop in price when that happens. They'll still be accessible on foreign exchanges and decentralized exchanges. And I think the kind of saving grace for the industry right now, I think, is there's kind of a race, is decentralized exchanges. 0x appearing to be the kind of leading candidate here or the 0x relayers to offer a solution there. I think that's going to provide a a floor that regardless of any global regulatory whatever, I think if you, you know, if this stuff's all running on Ethereum natively, I think it's going to be really hard to crack down on it, and you're going to see a resiliency. Once those are live, stable, and well understood, that's 3 to 6 months. I think 3 months before they're like kind of working, and probably 6 more months before people are more comfortable with them. But as those mature, the markets are going to be, especially the altcoins and anything Ethereum-based, will become much more resilient.
And let me give another frame and a different way to answer that same question is I like to look at it with what are the positive catalysts that we see upcoming that are plausible, and what are the negative catalysts, right? So in terms of negative catalysts, there's regulatory crackdown from another nation could really be a negative catalyst for the short-term prices of different crypto assets. We don't think that's a real negative catalyst to the longer-term prices because everything in crypto is really built to be censorship resistant. But in the short to medium term, regulatory crackdown could definitely affect prices negatively. But on the positive side, positive catalyst side, there are many more things that we see as potential positive catalysts in the short to medium term, and I mean definitely in the long term, than there are negatives. So I think decentralized exchanges is a really good example of a possible positive catalyst. Adoption by a major tech company and just more major tech companies entering the space. You're already seeing major companies partner with Ethereum and start developing with Ethereum, joining the Ethereum Enterprise Alliance. So seeing more engagement there, I think, could be extremely positive. And the short to medium term mega catalyst that could really push prices is going to be actual approval of an ETF that tracks either Bitcoin or crypto or Ethereum. And I think that's something that it takes the flip side of the negative catalyst, the regulatory, where we actually get regulatory approval for an ETF, but that could bring in, you know, something in the billions of dollars into the space.
Well, the industry changes so much and so fast. I mean, it's anybody's guess what's going to happen. That's what makes it so fascinating, you know. The mechanics of what you guys do, just to take it in a little bit different direction, how many different tokens is your fund invested in approximately?
Yeah, so today we have two funds. We have our diversified fund and our concentrated fund. As the names imply, the diversified fund has about more assets in the concentrated fund. Specifically, we have about 27 or 28 assets in the diversified fund, and we have about 7 assets in the concentrated fund. The investment theses kind of for those two are on the diversified fund, you know, our goal is to offer investors a way to say, hey, crypto is going to change the world. There's all these different kind of major themes in crypto. We've developed some pretty strong theses around some of these themes, and within each of these themes, we're going to identify the best projects and then hold multiple of the best projects within each theme. Sometimes those projects are complementary, sometimes they're competitive. I'll come back and give an example in a second. And then in our concentrated fund, we have 7 assets, and those 7 assets are basically the 7 assets that we just have the most conviction in between Tushar, myself, and the rest of our research and quantitative teams. Some of those are going to be more concentrated in some theme than another, but we just think those are going to be home runs. With regards to, I'll give some examples of some of those themes in the diversified fund. So one is confidential transactions. So the kind of candidates that there is pretty obvious. Another one is decentralized cloud. Another one are decentralized prediction markets, which we've already spoken about. So we have, I believe, 7 buckets or 7 themes in our diversified fund, and we have between 2 and 5 assets within each theme in that diversified basket.
Well, one question I have, how do you keep all these tokens in a safe spot? I mean, not all the companies I've looked at have even usable wallets. You don't want to keep them on exchanges, I'm sure. Like, how do you do that? You know, with 27 tokens, I mean, what do you do?
That's a great question, and it was pretty difficult at the beginning because, you know, when we were just getting into this space, we thought there must be secure wallet solutions that make sense that let us store all these tokens, and no, there really isn't anything that really works with the diversity of the different types of tokens that we work with and also provides the adequate enterprise-level security that we need to have as a business in this space. So the two most important principles that we were looking for were multi-signature and cold storage being combined, and we could not find any real solutions that solve that, so we ended up making our own. We know a lot of people leave their money on the exchanges. We think that's a generally terrible idea in terms of exposing yourself to risk. So what we do is we actually transfer our assets to cold storage, where our private keys are stored and sharded into multiple pieces. Each piece has redundant backups that are stored both locally as well as across different states in order to prevent against any catastrophic loss due to natural disaster or other such occurrences. And we find that the level of security and redundancy that we've brought to the system is really unique in the industry.
Yeah, maybe a little more detail. It was quite literally a bunker where we actually trade from. And obviously, there has to be at least one computer online to broadcast transactions to get the money out of cold storage. The offline, we have multiple offline computers that Dushar and I each use, and we use those to actually access our private keys. As he said, they're sharded. So that means neither Dushar nor I can independently send a transaction. We have to be together to do so, and we only do that in our – we have the backups in the multiple safe deposit boxes, as he suggested, in the event one of us dies or something happens. And we even have our wills written such that if something happens to one of us, the other one can then get access to the safety deposit box so that we can we spent a lot of time on it. And then we hired an engineer. Ryan's been with us for about a month now, maybe 3 weeks. And he is building a system that's going to – right now we do everything by hand. It's miserable. The system Ryan is building is going to automate this whole system, and we're going to open source it when it's ready.
So, all right, so you guys have essentially a custom multi-coin wallet for all your holdings. Is that what you're saying?
It's a multi-signature, multi-protocol cold storage system that's designed to run across multiple computers because that's the only way to do such a thing, yes.
Interesting. All right. Well, it sounds very well thought out, and that's great. One last thing I thought of is, since you guys generate this research and you're spending time and effort, do you allow people to see your portfolio and trade it even if they don't work with your fund, or do you not disclose that? And do you sell or provide all your research, or do you keep some proprietary? Have you thought about selling your research?
Yeah, no, so we don't publicly disclose our portfolio. Certainly, we talk about some of the assets that are in our portfolio. Obviously, just based on listening to this conversation, you can pick up on a few of them. But we don't actively disclose what's in the portfolios or what their allocations are or how we think about hedging. That stuff's all proprietary. What we do publish is our research, which is at multicoin.capital/blog. And we have a few different kinds of types of research we publish there. One are asset valuations. These actually are intended to look much like a Wall Street style equity valuation report. And then we also provide kind of editorials or op-eds on interesting and oftentimes controversial ideas within the space, exploring just some typically technical things, figuring out how some things might work, exploring new business models, exploring new token dynamics, exploring things like velocity, which we spoke about earlier. So all of that research is all public and open. Whatever we publish on our blog is free to the world. Anyone can download it, look at it, whatever. We have a subscribe box. Please subscribe, and it will land in your inbox for you for free. We do have some stuff internal that we don't publish, but that's just typically a function of, we spent some time on something, we decided it wasn't worth publishing, and so, we moved on.
All right, very good. So for people that are interested in talking to you and, possibly investing in the fund, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you guys?
Yeah, please just email us. Our email addresses are just Kyle@Tushar@multicoin.capital.
Okay, very good, guys. Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast, and sounds like you've got a wealth of information that's lurking below the surface. So I encourage people to read your blog and check it out, because we all need some well-thought-out research on all these tokens to figure out what's going on,
We appreciate the time and the opportunity to come on the show, Richard. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Richard.
The Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Blockchain Super Conference is coming to Dallas, Texas, February 16, 17, and 18 in 2018. If you know of a better way to get the latest insider knowledge about crypto, to hear directly from the top minds in this field, to interact personally with 800 fellow crypto lovers, hodlers, investors, miners, traders, developers, and founders, then I'd like to hear about it. If you don't, then you don't want to miss out. Register today for the Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Blockchain Super Conference. Go to BitcoinSuperConference.com and register today as a super early bird to get the lowest rates on tickets and hotel rooms. That's BitcoinSuperConference.com. You have been listening to Almost Here, Around the Corner Future Technology Podcast with Richard Jacobs.
Subscribe to this podcast, post a review, to discover more future technologies that are poised to transform our lives for better or worse, such as Bitcoin, artificial intelligence, 3D printing, blockchain, virtual reality, and more.